Good morning, and welcome to the March 24th, 2022 meeting of the House Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all these items in one place, they are attached in the calendar event that you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Mr. Lee, would you please take the roll?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call will commence now. Chair Davney?
Present.
Representative Sandsteed?
Present.
Representative Kreisha will be joining us shortly. Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels?
Daniels, present.
Representative Damith?
Present.
Representative Dravkowski?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Erickson, present.
Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, present.
Representative Mueller?
Mueller, present.
Representative Richardson? Representative Richardson? Representative Thompson?
Present.
Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott, present.
Representative Shung?
Present.
Representative Joachim? Representative Joachim? All right, Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Lee. Representative Thompson, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Wednesday, March 23rd? And if so, would you like to move approval of those minutes?
COVID-19. Yes, I've seen the minutes, Chair. So move.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Any discussion to the Thompson motion approving the March 23rd minutes? Seeing none, this is a voice vote. Members, please unmute. All those in favor of the Thompson motion approving the March 23rd minutes, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Thompson. Members, we have a number of bills on our agenda today. For our first bill hearing, we'll be hearing House File 3979 from Representative Howard. It's our intention to take action on this bill by 11 a.m. Representative Joachim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3979 before the committee and to refer to Human Services Finance and Policy?
Chair, apologies, she hasn't quite joined us yet.
Oh, my apologies. Representative Walgamott?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Welcome to the committee, Representative Howard. Your bill has been moved with a recommendation to refer it to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. House File 3979 is a vitally important bill because it seeks to address the challenges facing our most challenged students, students that have experienced trauma, students that have severe emotional and mental health diagnoses. And what this bill does is seek to support the important and incredibly difficult and challenging work being done in school settings to meet the immense need of these students. This bill would create permanent funding for school-based mental health for special education students who are in level four settings. These resources are vital because the reality is our intermediate schools and those serving these students are on the front line attempting to provide the mental health care that these students need, along with providing an education, despite that these schools were not designed for that, and more importantly, are not adequately funded to do this work. But they are doing this work, and they're making a difference. In way of background, this funding was originally allocated in 2017 as short-term grants to serve students to create mental health models that would embed education and mental health services in the school day and classroom to serve students. And it's been incredibly important funding. It's helped create partnerships with mental health agencies, psychiatric crisis services and hospitals, partnerships with case management and county services, and it's helped provide the wraparound support for our students who absolutely need it. Simply put, we need permanent funding and more of it so that we are hearing and listening to our schools and our staff who are truly begging us to be a partner in this work with them. The challenges facing our intermediate schools and all of our schools that serve these most vulnerable students are immense. And that was made tragically clear in our community earlier this year when Jamari Rice was shot and killed outside of his school in our community in Richfield. It has ripped a hole in our community, a hole in the students and staff at Intermediate School District 287. And it's our job in the legislature not to look away, to hear and to listen and to support our schools and our students that are doing this work. They need our help, and this bill will help. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Howard. First on the list, Sandy Lewandowski, Superintendent, Intermediate School District 287. Superintendent, good to see you again. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Dabney. Thank you for that introduction. My name is Sandra Lewandowski, and I'm the Superintendent of Intermediate District 287. And I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3979. As an intermediate school district, our programs and services are centered on the children whose mental health needs are among the highest in the state. Headlines across the country and in Minnesota have highlighted the fact that there are not sufficient mental health providers nor treatment beds available for students and families who are in extreme mental health crises. This is not a new problem, according to Sandy Chang, the president of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Over the past several decades, we have been seeing an increase in conditions in children and adolescents. However, I also know that the pandemic and episodes of racial trauma have made it much worse. There will likely not be sufficient providers nor treatment beds available in the foreseeable future. And even if they are, our families are often turned away from those very beds by the barriers that exist to access them. However, the therapeutic treatment program that we created in partnership with the Wilder Foundation and was a result of the two-year innovative mental health grants that were received and authored in 2017, is just what is needed right now. It is an alternative to the lack of sufficient mental health treatment options and is actively serving elementary and middle school students in both the north and south areas of our intermediate district. The students being served are disproportionately BIPOC, and most would otherwise not have access to mental health treatment. Today, we have the effective intensive mental health treatment that you envisioned in 2017. And that treatment is right in the very school where some of the students are placed because of their special education needs. The legislature invested in the model and it has been delivered. And now such intensive programming, as I said, is more needed than ever before. We are seeing students this year who are successfully transitioning back to their home school because of this intensive joint programming between the Wilder Foundation and District 287. It is an effective model that is urgently needed for students and families who cannot access needed mental health services for their child. But I would also submit it is needed to ensure that we as a school community can operate a safe school environment. In my tenure as a superintendent, I am haunted by stories of mental health crises that we have heard from families, as well as the crises that we experience every single day in our classroom and hallways. As a superintendent of a school district who's now experienced a school shooting that resulted in the death of a student, a serious injury to a second student, and untold numbers of staff who are traumatized by this event, I'm asking you to recognize that this happened on our collective watch. It is no longer acceptable to place students and staff in a school environment with untreated mental health needs. I respectfully ask that you recognize that without proper treatment, we risk injuries and assaults to our schools, communities, and our staff. It is critically important to understand that public safety is inextricably intertwined with intensive mental health services in my district. I'm asking that the innovative mental health grants be continued as written in House File 3979 so that intensive mental health services can continue to be funded and delivered at the school level. I see this responsibility and commitment as a combined responsibility of the legislature and myself as a school leader. I come to you here today as a school leader asking you to join me in ensuring that our students receive the services they need and that we can collectively uphold our responsibility to provide a safe working environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Lewandowski. Next on the list, Val Raybeau, Superintendent, Northeast Metro Intermediate School District 916. Superintendent, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I am Val Raybeau, Superintendent of Intermediate District 916. I am very grateful for the opportunity to share some additional information about the highly specialized work of the intermediates and the innovative programs and services that we developed to support the students that we serve from our 13 member districts in the Northeast Metro. Because of the funds previously available through the Innovative Mental Health Grant, we were able to start 4 educational mental health classrooms. We refer to them as EMHCs. Our EMHC program is a classroom setting that provides both educational and mental health programming to students grades K through 8. The integrated model includes 3 hours a day of mental health interventions and 3 hours of academic instruction. This program within our setting for school allows access to family therapy at school to help generalize those skills that the students have learned and to encourage lasting positive change. The EMHC team also provides assistance to families to navigate community-based services. When services in the EMHC are complete, students transition to a less restrictive level of care. Our original model was to transition students back to the setting for a classroom and then to their home school, but the program has been so successful that students are transitioning directly from our EMHC program back to their home schools to learn alongside their friends and peers. I recently met with a family touring our program that needed assurances that this would not be yet another failed placement. Their kindergartner had already been moved 4 times to 4 different schools, 4 different educational settings within the first 6 months of her first year in school. Her explosive behaviors were more than could be managed in every setting and were so disruptive that she had multiple suspensions. Imagine that as a kindergartner. This child's life had dramatically changed at the start of the school year when her mother passed away due to a terminal illness. The family came to see our school. It was auntie's grandma and a very young father to learn about the healing learning environment and the mental health services that we were providing. They said multiple times, we had no idea places like this existed, and asked more than once, are you sure you can handle her behavior? Before they left, they shared that she wouldn't talk about the death of her mother and had not yet cried. 3 months later, the teacher called the father to share a significant breakthrough. During a behavioral event, his daughter began crying for her mother, and the mental health team was able to begin processing the loss with her. The family was so grateful that this little girl is starting to heal and will soon be able to return to the school her brother attends. Every one of our students has a story that's filled with unimaginable life challenges. Last summer, we weren't sure that we were going to be able to continue with our EMHCs, but we were able to patch together some funds to keep them going. We also know that permanent funding, if available, will help us to, again, expand those services that we used and started back when the Innovation Mental Health Grant began, and that was early childhood intervention. And that's a treatment program where preschoolers who are experiencing trauma and behavioral challenges were able to also receive services. Additionally, the mental health and chemical health well-being program to address student addiction and chemical health needs. These programs and others you heard about from Sandy this morning are helping prevent chronic and long-term mental illness and school failure. With the appropriate mental health programming, our most educationally vulnerable children can grow into productive citizens who will contribute in many positive ways to our communities. Thank you again for considering the intermediate students and their families.
Thank you, Superintendent Bo. Next, Amber Bruins, Clinical Director of Behavioral Health, Southwest Central Service Cooperative. Ms. Bruins, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Amber Bruns, and I am the Clinical Director of Behavioral Health Services at Southwest West Central Service Cooperative. I'm testifying in support of House File 3979. We were an original recipient of the Innovative Mental Health Grant that was used to support the mental health needs of our students in our federal Setting 4 programs. We have six of these programs in our 18-county region in Southwest Minnesota, with sites located in Pipestone, Montevideo, Bellevue, Windham, Wilmer, and Cosmos. Currently, we are providing educational services to 208 students in these locations. The previous funds allowed us to provide school-linked mental health services in partnership with Greater Minnesota Family Services by individuals qualified to conduct diagnostic assessments, develop individualized treatment plans, and conduct individual therapy sessions at our federal Setting 4 programs. This service delivery model has allowed students to gain access to mental health services while keeping the students in school, minimizing the amount of time missed and supporting the family by bringing services to the student. The funds allowed us the opportunity to increase our students' skill sets, to handle difficult situations, and to learn effective strategies to work through their mental health needs. It's allowed us to make connections between our students' families, the school, and our mental health providers. It has also proven to be an effective strategy in reaching children who have never accessed mental health services before. As we are aware, the lack of services, economic and educational inequalities, and untreated mental health illnesses are significant detriments to the achievement of students in outstate Minnesota. Median household incomes are lower in our rural areas. One in five children ages birth to 18 years have a diagnosable mental illness. Mental health concerns among students correlate with unfavorable educational outcomes and increased rates of criminal activity. These funds allow us to address these barriers and support the mental health needs of the children in our region. During a meeting I attended at the initial onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, an invited speaker stated that a mental health tsunami would follow this pandemic. It appears in my observations that the mental health tsunami has arrived. The children of Minnesota need us now more than ever. Investing in mental health services for the children in our federal Setting 4 programs, for those students identified as having some of the most significant needs in our education system, is critical. Please support the continued work of mental health services and our federal Setting 4 programs by supporting House File 3979. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today.
Thank you, Ms. Bruns. Last on this list of testifiers, Josh Nelson, Chief Academic Officer, Lakes Country Service Cooperative. Mr. Nelson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 3979 on behalf of Lakes Country Service Cooperative, and most importantly, the students and families that we serve. I am Josh Nelson, and I currently serve as our Chief Academic Officer at Lakes Country, which includes programs that serve students directly. In 2016-2017, our Lakes Country team worked collaboratively with 9 regional special education directors and superintendents from our 35 school district members to establish Setting 4 programming in Governor's Region 4. During the data collection phase of creating the vision, it was determined based on referral criteria that our member schools collectively had 84 of roughly 32,000 students that needed this level of specialized service. On July 1st, 2017, we hired our first staff member and established sites in Alexandria, Fergus Falls, and Moorhead. After revisioning in 2020, we decided to expand our programming in Fergus Falls and Alexandria as a means to be more efficient. Although we no longer have a site in Moorhead, our future plans are to reestablish in that area in the near future. It has become apparent in the past 5 years of operation that we need more capacity for students and families to access mental health services. In the perfect world, parents can continue mental health services from their current provider. In reality, parents would need to remove students from school for a day at a time to be able to continue accessing those services. A much more efficient model would be for Lakes Country to employ or contract our own mental health practitioner to not only serve the student directly at the site, but to also help build capacity in our teachers to better serve our students in the environments where they're delivering core instruction. I envision a day when our mental health practitioners are working alongside all other staff members on a daily basis in our setting four spaces to achieve the best outcomes for kids, which is not a new concept, however, it's new to us. The Mental Health Innovation Grant Program would help us bring this concept to life and strengthen our service to kids without becoming an additional financial burden to our districts. Mr. Chair, thank you for this opportunity to represent rural Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the bill hearing. We received one request for public testimony. Josh Downham, Government Relations, Minneapolis Public Schools. Mr. Downham, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Josh Downham, Minneapolis Public Schools. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to testify very briefly on this bill. Those of you who were part of this committee in 2017 will recall, the innovative mental health grants, one of the stated purposes of those grants was to come up with best practices and then share those best practices out across the other level four programs across the state. And as Mr. Nelson just stated, it's critically important that all students being served in federal setting four programs have access to these innovative programs. And so my request, and we're very supportive of this bill, Mr. Chair, we simply ask that that the funding be available to all programs statewide. So that's my testimony and happy to answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Downham. Members, just noting that both representatives, Joachim and Richardson, have now joined us. Questions from members? Representative Bennett, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I do. And I believe this question or a couple questions actually would be for the bill author. But I'm curious because there's no appropriation listed that I can see in the bill. So how much is this going to cost? It comes from the general fund, I take it. And then how much will the TAILS be for this?
Representative Howard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, we intentionally left the funding blank, knowing that we're entering the budget process here. I guess what I would say, especially in light of the last testimony, we hope that we provide enough resource so that we're able to meet the needs of not just our intermediate schools, but the level four students across the state. I think what we'd hope is that the fiscal committees that are looking at this can take a look at the available resources and adequately fund this initiative going forward. To your question about the TAILS, I do think it's important that we provide permanent resources. We've done kind of the one-time grants in the past. We know that this is an ongoing permanent need and so it merits ongoing financial support.
Mr. Strom, perhaps, can you identify for us what was appropriated in 2017 so that we've got some context for Representative Bennett's question?
Mr. Chair, let me get right back to you about that. I believe it was $4.9 million in total, but let me triple check.
Thank you very much. Representative Bennett, you have a follow-up you indicated?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so It does concern me that we don't have an amount listed here. And I make this statement, I fully support mental health programs in our schools, and I have voted to finance these things in the past. But I'm very concerned that we don't see the costs here, and especially in the TAILS. I'm curious, Representative Howard, have you thought about using federal funds for this funding instead of the general fund?
Representative Howard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, we think, I haven't had those specific conversations, happy to look and see if there's a path And maybe some of my testifiers could speak to the state versus federal fund piece. I would say this absolutely merits state resources, and that's why we're directing those force open this bill.
Thank Representative you. Bennett.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And just a comment then, as much as I support this type of programming and in funding, I feel like in a non-budget year, I'm really hesitant to do this for two reasons. One is we don't know the financial costs at this point in this committee. And two, burdening the tails like this when in an economy where we have no idea we could be in a recession in a year or two, that concerns me as well. Just the unknowns there. If this were a budget year and we were planning things out that way, I'd probably vote differently, but I'm very hesitant to vote for this because of that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I can try to address the federal question.
Oh, would you please, Superintendent Lewandowski? I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not sure if Representative Bennett was referring to the recent round of federal funding through the ESSER funding. I can speak to that. It's particularly challenging for intermediate districts in that intermediate districts were not equitably funded during these major rounds of federal funding. In fact, we were significantly offered less in federal funding than what K-12 districts were received and needed. For that reason, this bill is even more important to offer the kinds of services that are written up in the bill. I think the other thing I would just mention, I appreciate the amount of money that might ultimately be noted in the bill. It's also critically important if we are going to maintain a safe public environment for our students coming through the school doors. We need this funding because right now we're operating with many students who are untreated in their mental illness, and we are seeing evidence of the kinds of injuries and trauma that are occurring. And we frankly cannot continue in that kind of environment with untreated mental illness. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. And Representative Bennett, I appreciate your prudence around the state budget. We can always be in a recession in a year or two. At any given time, but the Department of Employment and Economic Development did announce this morning that unemployment in Minnesota is now at a more than 20-year low, that Minnesota gained 5,200 jobs last month in February, and that labor force participation is rising again. So we are, at this point at least, looking at a strong Minnesota economy, and we know that Minnesota's unemployment rate, for instance, is pretty consistently below the federal unemployment rate. So certainly there's some headwinds, but we're starting from a strong position. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry I was a little tardy to committee. And I just wanted to thank especially Superintendent Lewandowski for her amazing years of service and being a champion in this arena. And it must feel like you've been rolling a rock uphill, because we have not only underinvested in our schools and our students, we've underinvested in their health. And we have a surplus right now, folks, because we have underinvested all of these years. And I can't think of a better time to address the whole children that are sitting in our schools. This has been an issue for over a decade, as Superintendent Lewandowski can tell you, our kids are not doing well. They need help. Our cooperative schools and our intermediate schools are the ones that our public schools turn to when they're overburdened and can't handle what's going on and don't have enough services in their schools. I also hear what Mr. Donham said to make sure, because some school districts do run their own level four programs and should have some access to this money as well. But if we don't step up now for our cooperative and intermediate school districts, I don't know when we will. It's time. And I want to thank Representative Howard for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Representative Erickson, we are trying to get to a vote out of respect for the author and other members of the committee. Do you have a brief question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, the American Rescue Plan dollars should definitely be available for this. You know, this puts my team in a difficult position because we want to help in the level four area with grants. But, you know, when we don't know what the amount is and whether or not the governor, if we did fund it out of general fund, would take it out of the American Rescue Plan anyway, those dollars, you know, that gets to be frustrating for us. So, you know, if you hear some no votes, it's not because we don't support, you know, the grant program, but we need to know what the funding is and where it's going to come from. And I think those decisions could have been made by now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Howard, where do you recommend that, where do you propose the funding come from in the bill? In response to Representative Erickson's comment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I think in the past, this grant has been funded in multiple places in the budget, whether it be through the education budget or in the healthcare side. To be quite clear, I'm kind of agnostic. I think the most important thing is that we utilize the resources where they're needed most, and with the available surplus, we have the opportunity, and I would submit the obligation to do so.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Mr. Strom, have you found the answer to the question on how much we appropriated in 2017?
Mr. Chair, members, in Laws 2017, First Special Session, Chapter 5, Article 2, Section 56, the funding was $4.9 million for the biennium, so half of that per year for fiscal years 18 and 19. So that was the funding that was specific to the intermediates in that time period. The intermediates may want to comment about the regular school-linked mental health, whether grants, whether any of that grant money goes to them. But in terms of the innovative programs, that was the amount that was in Chairman Loon's bill in 2017.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. And not surprisingly, your memory was correct. Representative Howard, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be incredibly brief and just thank our testifiers. Thank the leaders and the staff of our intermediary schools and all of our leaders that are serving our students that that need our support. One thing I forgot to mention in my opening comments, this bill is being carried in the Senate by Senator Duckworth. I would hope that putting resources into mental health for our students who are most in need are something that can garner bipartisan support. And I appreciate the discussion and it will encourage support of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Howard. With that, Representative Wolgamott renews his motion to refer House File 3979 to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Lee, please call the roll. The chair votes aye.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call voting on HF 3979.
Mr. Lee, we're having some significant, I'm having some significant difficulty in hearing you.
Many of the bars and restaurants.
We've also got some interference from someone. If everyone could please mute except when they're called on.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call voting on HF 3979 will now commence. Chair Dabney?
Aye.
Chair Dabney? Aye. Representative Sandstead?
Aye.
Representative Sandstead? Aye.
Mr. Lee, we're really having difficulty hearing you.
Representative Krisha? Is it better now?
There's a great deal of static. So let's. Let's try this. I'm assuming that everyone can hear me. So I would like to, the chair will call the roll. Mr. Lee, if you can track the votes, if I can get my computer to work properly.
Chair, I'm happy to call the roll.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Ms. Bird.
I may not call it in the right order, so apologies. Chair Dabney?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sandsted? Vice Chair Sandsted, please unmute. Lead Krisha? Representative Bennett?
No.
Bennett, no. Representative Daniels?
Daniels votes no.
Daniels, no. Representative Damuth?
Damuth votes no.
Damuth, no. Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Drazkowski votes no. Representative Erickson?
It votes no.
Erickson votes no. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Feist votes aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Representative Marquardt?
Marquardt, aye.
Representative Mueller?
No.
Mueller, no. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson, aye. Representative Thompson?
Yoruba.
Thompson, aye.
Thompson, aye. Representative Wolgamott?
Wolgamott votes aye.
Wolgamott, aye. Representative Zhang?
Aye.
Representative Zhang votes aye. Representative Joachim?
Joachim, aye.
Joachim, aye. Representative Sandsted? And Representative Krisha. So I believe on a vote of 9-6.
All right.
Pass.
With a vote of 9-6, the Wolgamott motion prevails. Representative Howard, Human Services, Finance, and Policy for you. Thank you very much to the testifiers. Thank you, Representative Howard. Thank you, Ms. Burt, for stepping in with the technical difficulties. Members, our next bill is House File 3580 from Representative Mariani. It's our intention to lay this bill over for further consideration and possible inclusion by 11:20. Representative Feist, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3580 before the committee to lay over for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
Chair Dabney, I think we want to call on someone else.
I think we do. The chair will move House File 3580 before the committee to lay over for further consideration and possible inclusion. Representative Mariani, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. I've been here a long time, so have you, and I almost saw a first, which would have been the chair calling the roll. Boy, that would have been so cool, but Ms. Burt did an excellent job.
She always does.
Oh, Lord.
Whatever we ask of her.
Members, House File 3580 is actually an update of a bill that I shared with the committee a couple of weeks ago. I appreciate the chair's invite to have this conversation. We had a good discussion when we presented that bill a few weeks ago, having to do with funding for our EL formula, or EL students in our state. This bill has a few new elements, having to do with setting up a micro-credentialing process for teachers and administrators, not mandatory, but that would entail some costs in terms of rulemaking. We had a good discussion in Chair Richardson's committee about that. However, it does also continue to have the provisions on funding for our EL students through the formula, primarily through an indexing process, and then a distribution of that indexed amount. The bottom line, members, is that you all know this because I've been watching your hearings. You know, the state is severely under-equipping our school districts in terms of adequately, fairly, strongly helping our EL students all over the state to achieve the academic proficiency that we and they desire of themselves. There are several proposals, Representative Herz, the governor's, my bills, for this committee to flexibly consider in terms of how to respond to that. And I certainly want to urge the committee to do that in whatever way it feels comfortable to doing it, because the urgency is vital. And it's really important that we act boldly, we act now. And, you know, the future of our state, and I'm not talking like way, you know, down the line, is definitely at stake here in terms of our human resource needs in our state. When I authored the LEAPS Act several years ago, we created a powerful framework of practice and accountability in order to get that right. One of the things I didn't get right, however, was I didn't properly create the ability for the department itself to be powerfully resourced. This is the type of work that really does require a strong Department of Education role in assisting school districts, some of them who, you know, are, you know, because of the big global changes in our, you know, impact in our society, are working with new students and new experiences, and not as aware of the recent best practices, operational practices, et cetera. I've met with the Department of Education staff just I think last week. And I got to tell you, you know, one of their key members actually joined the meeting by pulling over in her car. She was out in the Butterfield area with the department providing some good, you know, expert advice to the good folks in Butterfield. She's the only one in the department that does it. She drives all over the state. That's not a system. That's not fair to our state. It certainly isn't fair to our students. We really do need to resource this department better. And so, you know, there's lots of things the department could do in terms of curriculum help, coaching, evaluation, financial advice, language access, specialists. They have a strong understanding of what it takes for us to comply with our own law as well as with federal law relative to these students, and they're severely under-equipped to do that. One of the things that Representative Erickson asked in a prior committee, and it's a fair question, you know, was, you know, so why such a big percentage of the index increase, you know, to the department? And the answer is what I just stated, because that's what it's gonna take in order for local school districts to be successful. However, there's different ways to do this. We could do a straight up appropriation for the department and even prescribe, you know, what particular, I wouldn't do too much detail. I don't believe in super detailing work for state departments, but I do think it's important to set up expectations that good evaluation, good coaching, good financial advice, et cetera, you know, be provided, and the department can craft that. So there's a different way to approach that in addition to the indexing, which is currently in the bill. And I am certainly open and want to encourage you all to be open to doing that. I think the bottom line is that we really need, if we're going to get it right for these students, we have to both make sure that our school districts are properly resourced and make sure that our State Department has the resources to be able to provide that powerful advice. The newness in this bill, and then I'll stop and let the testifiers speak, has to do with micro-credentials that are not mandatory, but that would be made available to both teachers and administrators. This would require the Pelsby Board to engage in rulemaking to create those credentials in a process for them, as well as our BOSA Board to do that for administrators. I'll stop there. I will turn, let me just say, there will be costs with that. Not huge costs, but rulemaking does cost. Pelsby does have some capacity relative to that, but would still require some assistance, financial assistance to make that happen. The Bozeman Board does not have that capacity. And so would also require one-time appropriation to make that happen. Mr. Chair, members, I'll stop and I'll turn to my testifiers to explain, what those, this particular concept of the micro credentialing.
Thank you, Representative Mariani. First on the list is Matt Shaver, Policy Director with Ed Allies. Mr. Shaver, please introduce yourself for the record. Proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Dabney and members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver and I'm the policy director for Ed Allies. I'm here to highlight three provisions in House File 3580 that will make our school funding system more equitable. Thank you, Representative Mariani, for your longtime commitment to supporting multilingual learners in Minnesota. First, indexing the EL funding formula to basic education revenue on lines 2.10 through 2.12, in addition to being a way to guarantee a significant increase to per pupil EL funding for the first time in 20 years, would also be a critical step toward a weighted student funding formula that would allow us to no longer pit constituencies against each other when making funding decisions. The status quo means that every dollar that goes to the special education cross-subsidy reduction aid is a dollar that does not go to EL cross-subsidy reduction. Our funding formula adequacy problem creates a zero-sum dynamic where advocates for our most marginalized students have to compete against one another. What is proposed in House File 3580 gets at the cross-subsidy problem at its source, the adequacy of the EL funding formula. This linkage is a meaningful step toward eliminating the EL cross-subsidy permanently by centering student need. Lines 2.24 through 2.30 would put Minnesota on the vanguard of education finance by creating a specific funding stream also tied to the base formula for students with limited or interrupted formal education. Disruptions to the lives of children are happening right now all around the world. Some of these students will inevitably end up in our schools, and many are already here, bringing with them an unstable path. Past and unique path ahead, and they deserve dedicated funding to meet their needs. Finally, one of the few things we do know about compensatory revenue spending is that a large portion of it is used to provide EL services for students. Lines 2.31 through 2.32 would ensure that those funds are transparently planned for in order to support the progress of multilingual students. Overall, this bill finds a solid balance between funding equity, flexibility, adequacy, and accountability. Not an easy needle to thread, and this is why we urge inclusion of House File 3580 in the final education package. Thank you again for your leadership, Representative Mariani. Thank you to the committee for your time. Thank you all for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Sam Oak, Director of Equity and Inclusion with the Prior Lake Savage Area Schools. Mr. Oak, I hope I'm saying that correctly. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair, Dr. John is actually going to play a video from him.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Burt. Thank you, committee members. My name is Leotawa Dr. Robert John Peterson, and I will be presenting a pre-recorded video of about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from Mr. Sam Oak, who is the director for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion in Prior Lake Savage Schools.
Hello, good morning, everyone. My name is Sam Oak. I'm the Director of Equity and Inclusion for the Prior Lake Savage Area School District. Prior to this year, I've been working in EL all throughout my academic career. I actually came to the U.S. as a refugee from Cambodia at the age of 2 years old. My parents survived the Cambodian killing fields. And I said wholeheartedly that I would not be where I am today without the tireless hard work and passion that our English learning teachers and my English learning teachers have put into creating the person that I am. So I have a lot of gratitude and thanks to them, and I'm speaking for them right now, asking all of you to really please support this bill. EL practice have been so underfunded for so long, and districts far and wide across Minnesota have been struggling to meet the needs of our English learners because of the lack of funding, the lack of resources, and even the lack of understanding by many staff members within the school district. So any support that you can put towards the EL program will go a long ways at meeting such a large and important population of our students there. We know that the regular day-to-day instruction does not meet the needs of students who have come from war, who have lost so much, have to overcome the language barrier, the economic barrier, because students who come here as refugees don't come automatically into wealth. That's far from the truth. The cultural dissonance that could occur, and just being able to feel loved as they're trying to find their place within two worlds, from their home culture to their school culture, and for some, even three worlds as they go out in public and find a very, very different environment there. So there is a huge need and a huge gap. I just want to close out this talk with a little poem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're going to stop there.
Chair Chavney, you're muted.
Thank you, Ms. Burt. We've got all the technology here this morning. Next, Leah Soderlund, teacher in Moundsview Public Schools and officer of MnTESOL. Ms. Soderlund, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks for having me. My name is Leah Soderlund. I'm here today as a representative of MnTESOL. It's an organization of 1,000 educators from public and private settings, from early childhood through higher ed, who are all committed to the education of our multilingual and EL students. I'm also here because I'm a teacher of elementary English learners in the Moundsview Public Schools. I'm excited that the bill establishes rulemaking authority to create a micro-credential for all general ed teachers and administrators. Teachers would have the opportunity to improve their educational practices and outcomes for multilingual students. As a current EL teacher, a co-teacher in general education classrooms, a provider of professional development, and a former EL program coordinator, I can assure you that the teachers of our multilingual students are asking for this. I say this based on evidence. The LEAPS Act of 2014 and the EL relicensure requirement continue to shed light just on how much teachers need and want to become more proficient teachers of language learners. MnTESOL, the organization I'm a part of, the Department of Ed, and EL programs and teachers across the state are doing our best to respond to the needs of our general education colleagues to provide them with this. But this micro-credential would really be the right next step in meeting the needs of our students. In the same way, administrators would have the opportunity to grow in their knowledge and their capabilities of leading effective programs for our multilingual students. I have worked with administrators who have and who do not have a deep knowledge of the process of learning language and its implications for education. Our students, teachers, programs, buildings, and districts would benefit greatly from administrators who choose to pursue this EL micro-credential. It is also the right next step in meeting the needs of the students in Minnesota, of all students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Soderlund. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We received no requests from the public for testimony. Any questions from members to the bill? Seeing none, Representative Mariani, you want to bring it home?
Mr. Chair, members, I really do appreciate the attention that this committee has been paying to this student population, important vital student population in our state. I don't think there's a school district anywhere in the state that doesn't have EL students. Even here in the Twin Cities, you know, continue to wrestle with how do we properly resource them? How do we engage in the best practices? So we're all in this together, and I would hope that however it is that you move forward, that there is a good, strong response to the very urgent need to get it right with these students and to do so by aligning our systems as powerfully as possible to get it right. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Greatly appreciate the time.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and thank you to your consistent attention to these learners. Much appreciated. With that, the chair renews his motion to lay over House File 3580 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Thank you, Representative, and thank you to the testifiers. For our next bill hearing, we have House File 4477 from Representative Bierman. It's our intention to lay this bill over by 11:35 a.m. Representative Jordan, would you like to make a motion to move House File 4477 to be before the committee and to lay it over for possible consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Representative Bierman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for taking the time to hear this bill today. Members, our education funding system at its foundation is based on student enrollment numbers. This bill addresses the challenge that school districts are facing right now of declining enrollment due to the pandemic. This bill will increase the state aid they receive in the first year after a decline in enrollment to help avoid dramatic swings in funding levels. School districts around the state are experiencing an unprecedented variation in their enrollment numbers. This bill would add some stability to their bottom lines, keep supports flowing to students, and would ensure districts can maintain their current staffing levels. This bill would just about double the revenue districts are getting from the declining enrollment aid stream by increasing the portion of aid that is being reimbursed from 28% to 60%. The current law allows for them to only capture 20% of the difference if enrollment decreases from 1 year to the next. With the data we have from the February 22nd forecast, it appears as though 175 districts and 50 charter schools will lose enrollment between fiscal year 23 and fiscal year 24. This bill will have a positive effect on the school budgets across the state. I have some testifiers who can speak to the specific impacts of declining enrollment in their school districts. So, Mr. Chair, if we could hear from the testifiers now, and then we can go to member questions and discussion, please.
Outstanding, Representative Bierman, thank you. First on my list is Mark Stotz, Director of Finance and Operations in District 196, the Apple Valley Rosemont Eagan School District. Mr. Stotz, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. I'm becoming a regular with this committee as I was here the last couple of weeks. So, Mark Stotz, Director of Finance and Operations with the Rosemount Apple Valley Eagan School District. Representative Bierman and myself have had quite a few conversations about this bill, and I'm kind of in a unique position, I guess, in that I've worked in four school districts in Minnesota. Two have had declining enrollment. Two of the districts have had increasing enrollment. Very rarely do you see a school district where enrollment remains stable. And then, of course, with the impact of the pandemic, virtually every district in the state has lost students. Fortunately for our district, we're about up to the levels that we were in 2019 prior to the pandemic. But I can tell you from a declining enrollment district perspective, it's really difficult to keep up or cut expenses in response to a loss in revenue. The example I like to give is that if a district loses 20 students, and they lose on average state aid of about $9,000 per student between the gen ed formula and categorical revenues, they lose about $180,000 in revenue. Now, if those 20 students are spread across grade levels, spread across buildings, a district may not even be able to reduce one classroom teacher. And so there's really no savings to the districts on the expense side, but they've lost the revenue. This bill would obviously help to offset that enrollment loss and the resulting decline in revenue. And I guess, you know, that's what I wanted to share with the committee is the fact that districts just can't cut enough, nor can they reduce their fixed expenses enough in order to keep up with that loss in revenue, particularly during this time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Stotz. Next, Jeff Elstead, Superintendent, Owatonna Public Schools. Superintendent Elstead, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. I'm Jeff Elstead, Superintendent for the Owatonna Public Schools. And I wanted to reiterate a few things that Mr. Stotz just shared. The costs that we have incurred or do not go down, because obviously we're seeing increases as well, but yet we're losing revenue. During a time period of 2021, we lost approximately $650,000 in revenue from our school district. And that was spread over about 75 students that left us during that time frame. However, we weren't able to reduce any of our staff because, as Mr. Stotts indicated previously, none of those students came in a perfect batch of one grade level. And so we had to keep our fixed costs and our teachers working with our kids. The other thing I would add to that is we're still in recovery mode. We're recovering from lost instruction, and having to cut teachers and increase class sizes only exacerbates the needs that we currently have. I would also like to add that this also impacts, obviously, because some of the students we lost would have qualified for compensatory education. So we've seen significant reductions to our compensatory revenue coming into our district that helps to meet the needs of our most at-risk academic students. With that, I would also add that this bill has the support of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the School Board Association, Minnesota Rural Education Association, and the Schools for Equity in Education. There is wide support to make this happen for our students and to help us to recover some of that lost revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Elstad. Last, Matt Hillman, Superintendent Northfield Public Schools. Dr. Hillman, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I'm Matt Hillman, Superintendent of Northfield Public Schools, and joining me is Val Murdestorf, Finance Director for Northfield Public Schools. I appreciate the opportunity to testify before the committee. The two previous testifiers, I'd like to reinforce their comments about enrollment loss not coming in neat baskets. They've articulated that very well. I know that people look at this as from a pandemic perspective, but I think across Minnesota in the coming years, you're going to see a decline in enrollment. I'm going to tell you the Northfield Public Schools story. We recently had a demographic study done. We are a desirable location, a quality reputation of a community and a school district, and we are still projecting a loss of 400 students over the next 10 years. The demographer who did our study, Hazel Reinhart, who may be known to a number of people on this committee, explains the loss of our enrollment based on two areas. One is the lower birth rate that she is seeing not only in our school district, but across the state. There's a number of reasons for that. In addition, in our community, we have a housing shortage, a significant housing shortage. And so not only do we not have enough inventory to turn over to accommodate people who want to come to our district, even if we built all of the homes and all of the townhomes over the next several years that are projected by our main communities, we wouldn't even be able to make up about half of that loss of enrollment. So for us, this translates into, for this year, this fiscal year, around $1 million in reduced revenue, because we estimate 70% of our overall revenue ties to student enrollment in some way, shape, or form. This bill would help us soften that impact. We've been good stewards of our dollars, so we have a solid fund balance reserve that we're using to offset these reductions. We are also using some of our ESSER funds to soften the fall, but we still have to make about $4.5 million worth of adjustments, to use a hockey analogy, to skate where our enrollment puck is going to be rather than where it is today. So this would be very helpful. It would allow us to, again, be very thoughtful in adjusting our reality to what our new enrollment reality will be. Finally, I would just also like to advocate that the biggest issue facing our school district is declining, is not just declining enrollment, but it is something that's being addressed in House File 2657. The special education cross subsidy, if this committee did one thing, if you fixed the special education cross subsidy, that would restore us by $5 million and we would not have to make reductions, because we could address the declining enrollment issue with our existing funding. So we support this bill, of course, and we ask also that you consider going forward with House File 2657. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Superintendent Hillman. Members, when this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion. We received no requests for public testimony. Questions from members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is for Mr. Strom. Could you enlighten us by giving us the pupil units for 2019, 2020, and 2021? And if you would do that, we could come back to you. But I think Mr. Hillman just made a really good point. If we would deal with a special ed cross subsidy, we could really help school districts to the extent that they have had declining enrollment, because we'd be covering those very expensive costs in special ed. But, you know, one of the reasons we have decline is that we had a lot of parents who decided not to begin their children at the kindergarten level because they were concerned about whether or not their children would actually get off to a good start. So now, while we wait for Mr. Straw, my question is for the author, my last question. Why increase from 28 to 60? What data proved to you that that was the increase that we should have? Was it based on the amount of surplus we have, or could you enlighten us on that, please?
Representative Bierman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson. It wasn't based on the surplus at all. It was just simply based that we needed to have an amount of an increase that would reflect what a lot of school districts are going through. There's no magic bullet, no magic number that I could come up with, but I just thought that that was a healthy increase for this moment in time. As Dr. Hillman mentioned, there's a lot of issues that are affecting communities and that affect the rates of school change and enrollment. So I don't know that I could quantify and calculate something that would work for every school district. I just thought that now is the time to do something, and that seemed like a good number to me.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bierman, this is ongoing, correct? If we were to enact the increase to 60%, that would be ongoing until we change it again, correct?
Representative Bierman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, for the time being, that would be ongoing. But as you know, we could do all sorts of things with school budgets, which, you know, we truly do need to address. It's a very complicated formula, as you know, as well as anybody. And I think that there are major changes we could make. I particularly like, as you just spoke, Dr. Hillman's suggestion that we fix the cross subsidy, which we could make other changes in the budget going forward. Thank you for the question.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. We're just awaiting Mr. Strom's report on the pupil units from 1920 and 21. Does he have that ready?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I've got enrollment numbers in front of me, which I'll give you for those 3 years, and then I'll send the pupil unit numbers separately. The pupil units, as you know, are weighted by the grade level.
Yeah,
for the enrollment numbers, for the fall of, let's see here, for the 2019 numbers, statewide was 889,304. That increased slightly to in 2020 to 893,203, and then fell in fiscal year 21 to 872,083, and then from this fall's enrollment count, that number is at, that number is 870,506. And I'll put a little table together for the committee on both enrollment and pupil units and send that off to you right after the year.
Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Representative Erickson, anything
Thank more? You, Mr. Chair. That was very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions from members, Representative Bierman, do you have any closing comments?
Adequately funding our schools in all our communities and is an essential part of the job we all signed up for. And the demands of society and the demands that the legislature puts on our schools never cease. So our support must be constant too. And I appreciate the testifiers today, and I appreciate the committee hearing the bill today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. With that, Representative Jordan renews her motion to lay over House File 4477 for possible inclusion or further consideration at a later date. Thank you to the testifiers. Our final bill hearing we have for today is House File 3403. From Representative Stevenson. Members, it's our intention to take action on this bill by 11:55 a.m. Representative Marquardt, would you like to make a motion to move House File 3403 before the committee and to refer it to the Labor, Industry, Veterans, and Military Affairs, Finance, and Policy Committee?
Mr. Chair, I will move House File 3403 be re-referred to that committee that you listed.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. It is a mouthful. With that, welcome to the committee, Representative Stevenson. Please introduce your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill relates to licensing procedures for many of our professions across the state where you have to have a license and you have to have a criminal background check. I want to stress from the beginning that the bill changes nothing in terms of what is required to get a license. It does not remove any requirements. It does not release you from having to have a background check. It does not make you eligible for any license that you otherwise wouldn't have. What it does is it gives applicants a chance to see if a prior criminal conviction would disqualify them from obtaining a license before they move through the process of trying to get whatever education or training or experience they would need in order to get a license. What we don't want is people expending all the time, energy, and money trying to get those things only to find out later on that a criminal conviction that they had at the beginning would have precluded them from getting a license in the first place. Many state agencies already have an informal process for doing this. This makes it a formal process, and importantly makes it a process that in most cases the applicant will be able to rely upon once they get their license in. So they wouldn't be able to go all the way through resting on this idea that maybe they'd be eligible only to find at the very end that they're not, provided that nothing changes about course about their criminal history. So with that brief explanation and recognition of the committee's limited time, I will turn things over to testifiers, but I'm certainly available to answer any questions that committee members may have. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. On the list today is Megan Forbes, Legislative Counsel for the Institute for Justice. Ms. Forbes, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Megan Forbes, and I'm Legislative Counsel at the Institute for Justice. We're a nonprofit law firm that works to protect civil liberties and to reduce barriers to earning a living. We've studied the barriers in licensing for people with criminal records nationwide, and we've been working in partnership with the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition, the Justice Action Network, and the Council of State Governments Justice Center on this bill that brings much needed transparency in the state's licensing process for people with criminal records. We're very grateful to Representative Stevenson for sponsoring this bill. As he mentioned, it doesn't change the standards that boards and agencies are using to determine whether a criminal record is disqualifying. It simply gives a person the ability to get a determination at any point, including before investing in training and education, about whether their criminal record would be disqualifying. This is a process that's been tested and proven to work in other states. 38 states have reformed their laws to increase transparency in licensing for people with criminal records. Also, 19 states and DC have already enacted this pre-application process, and our review of public records show that people are using the process to pursue stable employment. This bill adopts the best practices that we've seen and that have been endorsed by the Council of State Governments. These are practices that have been shown to give people who are rehabilitated a fair shot in licensing and finding work. The bill also helps employers that are looking for qualified workers right now and supports families. It helps connect people with good paying, stable jobs and better provide for their families. And research shows that a job is one of the best ways to reduce recidivism. Thank you for considering the important reforms in this bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Forbes. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of the hearing. We received no requests for public testimony. Questions from members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the author of the bill. Representative Stevenson, your language is very broad. And so I'm wondering, do you exclude any of these licensing boards or the conduct that's included in them?
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erickson. The language as it's presently written does not exclude any boards. I will be candid with you that we are waiting for a fiscal note that, because of the breadth of the bill, has a lot of state agencies, and it might be that after we receive that fiscal note that we need to narrow it a bit, but we are doing all boards. As for qualifications, I'm not sure it would make sense to limit it, because we certainly want people to know that they're not eligible if they're in fact not eligible. As I mentioned before, and I do want to stress, this bill does not change the qualifications for any position and doesn't make anyone eligible who is not currently eligible under law. It doesn't do anything different. It's about letting people know whether they're eligible or not, not changing eligibility. And I suspect that's part of the reason why we've obtained really broad bipartisan support in each committee stop we've been in so far.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Stevenson, this would include PELSB, which is the Professional Educators Licensing and Standards Board. And do you think it's okay to have these persons thinking they can apply to become teachers in our classrooms with our children?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's kind of the point. We want people who are not eligible to be teachers to know that they're not eligible so that they don't apply.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, well, if this bill proceeds, I hope, Representative Stevenson, that you make sure that PELSB then is not one of the boards that a person could think that he or she could apply to, because this does not make sense for PELSB. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this forward. There was discussion years ago, and I think we put it into place, the Institute of Justice might know, on similar language to make sure that people aren't going and spending a lot of money getting a college degree to find out that they can't get a job in their degree area because of a licensing issue. I think this is a great transparency bill and a way to make sure that people realize that those licenses just may be inaccessible to them. I don't think it changed, you clearly did not change anything else. So I just want to thank you for that. It just makes sense before people go through these lengthy processes, spend money, go to school, spend money in college to find out that they just aren't going to be able to get licensed. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a question for Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson, you had mentioned that there is going to be a fiscal impact for this, but I don't see a fiscal note. Do you know how much this will cost?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, yes, as I alluded to, a fiscal note's in progress. There's a number of state agencies that are impacted, so it's a large task. I don't think we have the note yet, but we will certainly be in touch about that.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I guess this is another case where, you know, we're a fiscal committee, but we don't know anything about the costs. And again, I'm uncomfortable voting for something when I don't know how much the costs will be. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bennett, I would remind you that the motion before us is to move it on to another committee, not to act on it in terms of spending anything out of the K-12 target at this time. We are awaiting with Chair Stevenson the fiscal note, but as he's indicated, it's maybe not complex particularly, but large and multi-dimensional fiscal note given the breadth of this bill. Any other questions from members? Representative Kreisha, I see you have your hand up.
I do, thank you. And so, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the comments and clarification. So I'm just so I understand, so we're moving this on to another committee, but our primary job is to look at the financials. Is it going to then come back to this committee when we have those financial details?
Representative Kreisha, I'm not sure where the final stop to this bill is. Chair Stevenson could possibly enlighten us on that, but any aspect of this that impacts the K-12 committee will be discussed once the fiscal note is available and decisions are made on the path forward on this bill. Representative Stevenson, can you provide any more?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kreisha, for that question. I think the answer is that if it's contemplated that any money would come out of the education budget, it would, of course, have to come back to the education committee. If funding is necessary and it's coming out of a different committee's budget target, it probably will go to that committee. I do expect we have a number of licensed professions in the commerce space. And so I'm anticipating having a conversation during our supplemental budget process in a couple weeks or a week and a half now about this bill in that committee. But until we have a fiscal note, it's hard to really understand which budgets it would come out of.
Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author, thank you for that. So, you know, logically, we have one of two things here, right? So it came through this committee because there's financial considerations. And, you know, just out of respect for the jurisdiction of this committee, we should not just be a path through the education. So what I would ask for, and it sounds like you have it, if there's any indications at all that there's an educational finance impact, I would ask for, you know, an agreement here that it does come back and that, you know, we don't necessarily have to make it a House floor motion re-referral. I'm not asking for a dust up. I'm just asking for an honest process that if that comes up and, you know, if there is anything in jurisdiction, bring it back to this committee. Let's do the right thing, because I think you have a good bill and we should respect that.
Representative Kreshaw, I can assure you a transparent process. With that, Representative Stevenson, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, for the good conversation. I just want to stress that if you are not eligible to get a license to be a teacher or anything else, passage of this bill will not change that. This is about letting people know if they are eligible or not eligible before they apply. That's all it's about. I'd ask for member support.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson. And with that, Representative Marcourt renews his motion to refer House File 3403 to the Labor, Industry, Veterans and Military Affairs, Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Lee, would you please call the roll?
Thank you, Chair Dabney. Roll call voting on HF 3403 will now commence. Chair Dabney?
Dabney votes aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Sandsted?
Sandsted votes aye.
Representative Sandsted, aye. Representative Kreshaw?
Kreshaw, aye.
Representative Kreshaw, aye. Representative Bennett?
No.
Representative Bennett, no. Representative Daniels?
Daniels votes no.
Representative Daniels, no. Representative Damuth?
No.
Representative Damuth, no. Representative Drevkowski? Representative Drevkowski? Representative Erickson?
Erickson votes no.
Representative Erickson, no. Representative Feist?
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Jordan?
Jordan, aye.
Representative Jordan, aye. Representative Marcourt?
Marcourt, aye.
Representative Marcourt, aye. Representative Mueller?
Mueller votes no.
Representative Mueller, no. Representative Richardson?
Aye.
Representative Richardson, aye. Representative Thompson? Representative Thompson?
Thompson votes aye.
Representative Thompson, aye. Representative Walgamott?
Walgamott votes aye.
Representative Walgamott, aye. Representative Shum?
Aye.
Representative Shum, aye. Representative Joachim?
Joachim, aye.
Representative Joachim, aye. Representative Drevkowski? Representative Drevkowski? Mr. Chair, I report we have 11 ayes, 5 nays, and 1 abstain.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. With a vote of 11 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails. Representative Stevenson, you're on off to a committee with a really long name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Members, we'll look forward to a full week next week. Thank you for your time and attention today. We are adjourned.